Israel and other allies are devising a multi-dimensional plot for instigating riots in the Islamic Republic and directing the wave of violence.
We are telling our enemies, the US, Britain, the Saudis, these are the ones that through their destructive media outlets, they are targeting our revolution. We are warning them that we will break you. We will crush you. You will not find any way into this territory.
Western countries expressed their open support for rioters and acts that Tehran described as inciting violence and hatred. The European Union and some Western countries have imposed sanctions on Iran over its approach toward the recent riots. Recently, the former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton confirmed that subversive groups in Iran, which he characterized as the opposition, are being armed with weapons imported from Iraq's Kurdistan.
United States should take history as a mirror and let it guide the future. That's what the Chinese President Xi Jinping told his American counterpart Joe Biden on the sidelines of the Group of 20 summit in Bali, Indonesia.
As always, I'm ready to have a candid and in-depth exchange of views with Mr. President on issues of strategic importance in China-US relations and major global and regional issues at our meeting today. I also look forward to working with you to bring China-US relations back to the track of healthy and stable development.
We share responsibility, in my view, to show that China and the United States can manage our differences, prevent competition from becoming anything ever near conflict, and to find ways to work together on urgent global issues that require our mutual cooperation.
The two held their first ever in-person meeting as relations between Washington and Beijing are at their lowest in decades, marred by disagreements over a host of issues from Taiwan to trade. During the landmark three-hour meeting, the Chinese president warned his U.S. counterpart not to cross Beijing's red line over Taiwan. According to the Chinese state media, Xi stressed that Taiwan is the bedrock of the political foundation of bilateral relations. Biden, for his part, said the U.S. wants to manage differences with China to prevent competition from becoming conflict. Biden said he sought to assure Xi that U.S. policy on Taiwan has not changed, seeking to lower tensions over the self-ruled island.
And I do not think there's any imminent attempt on the part of China to invade Taiwan. And I made it clear that our policy on Taiwan has not changed at all. It's the same exact position we've had. I made it clear that we want to see cross-strait issues peacefully resolved.
On North Korea, Biden told Xi that Beijing has an obligation to attempt to talk Pyongyang out of conducting a seventh nuclear test. U.S.-China relations have been strained in recent years by growing tensions over issues ranging from Taiwan to the South China Sea, trade practices and U.S. restrictions on Chinese technology. Regarding Taiwan, Beijing says it's a matter for the Chinese and China's internal affair. Anyone that seeks to split Taiwan from China will be violating the fundamental interests of the Chinese nation. Tensions over the self-ruled island have intensified following a provocative visit there in August by the U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi. The move prompted large-scale Chinese military drills around the island territory as well as a declaration by the U.S. President Joe Biden to defend Taiwan. Beijing has time and again slammed U.S. provocations, including encouraging and supporting pro-separatist independence forces on the island, saying that Washington has no right to interfere in how to resolve the Taiwan issue. Also, Biden dropped the hammer on China's semiconductor industry by fully implementing a slew of tough controls on the export of American chip technology to China. It would also undermine China's ability to import, manufacture, and export the semiconductors that run the world. The goal was to slow down and prevent Chinese military and technological advances. Washington also takes sides with Beijing's rivals in a maritime dispute in the South China Sea by routinely sending warships and warplanes to the waters to assert what it calls its right to freedom of navigation. China has repeatedly called on Washington to stop the provocative actions, which undermine peace and stability in the strategic waters. Last month, the White House and the Pentagon declared Beijing as Washington's most serious strategic competitor, in reports outlining U.S. defense and foreign policy strategies. Therefore, despite Biden's meeting with Xi, can the two manage their differences to prevent conflict, or is it inevitable that the two are on the collision course?
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. السلام علیکم و رحمت الله و برکاته. Dear listeners, sisters and brothers from all around the world, you are having my voice from IRIB English Radio, and this is Youth Station for Youth Generation. Today I'm here at your service. I'm Beta, a medical student, and the difference of the topic of today is that here there is the generation of two different aspects. Me, the candidate of the youth generation, and my dear brother Rohani from the older generation. Salam brother, how are you?
Assalamu alaikum. Fine, thank you very much.
And it's a pleasure to have you with me. I'm really honored. Could you please introduce yourself for dear listeners?
Yes, I'm Rohani, a student of Islamic Seminary, Islamic Hausa, a teacher in Islamic Hausa and also universities. And I got my PhD in Islamic philosophy.
Nice. And so, as you know, there are two different mindsets in even our Islamic religion. That there are some people that, you know, they have a special religious appearance, but they do not act as the rules of Islam. And also there is another group which says that, okay, in my heart, I will accept God and I have a special relationship with God, but I don't want to, for example, pray. I don't want to fast. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. What is actually the root of this problem?
Yeah, there's a lot of problem with these kind of people who say that, for example, in their own hearts, they believe in something, but theoretically
but
they
actions.
Believe in something, but practically they do not practice it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a contradiction here. You know, when you love someone, do you really behave in a way that annoy him, that disturb him? Of course not. If you love someone, you behave, you treat him or her in a way that is pleasant for him, that is enjoyable for him, yeah? That is something like a pleasure for him. Same is the case with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. If you love Allah, so you should not behave, you should not react or let's say act in a way that, for example, make you away from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
You know, they think like, okay, why should be, for example, that much important to, you know, make hijab for God? You know, God doesn't care about this sort of thing, just humanity. And this is the way they think, you know. They excuse themselves by the word humanity.
What does humanity mean, actually?
Actually, this is not my mindset, but they think that humanity means that, for example, you behave well in the society and you don't just bother other people, but in your domain, you can do whatever
so
you
where
want.
Does, where
At
does
the time,
this,
you don't bother other people.
Where does this good and bad come from?
Who knows?
This is the point. This is a really important question, that if something is good or something is bad. Now, the question is that, okay, why is it bad? Why is it good? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Who said that this is good and that is bad? And, for example, the person who is saying that, should we accept him? Should we trust him? Should we follow him? This is the question, you know? That is why we say that when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, as the creator of the whole universe, as the creator of us, who knows best who we are, because he created us. He knows perfectly that what we are and what are some of the things that is good for us and what are some of the things that are bad for us. So that is why when he orders us to do something and not to do something, it is because of this that he knows our nature. He knows our essence. He knows, let's say, our nature completely and perfectly.
Yeah.
And he knows what is best for us. You know, like, for example, a professional engineer of the, let's say, for example, Apple company, when they produce when they like make a mobile, that engineer knows best that what are some good thing, good software for it, some good hardware for it, and what is the problem of this mobile phone, or what is the solution, or some of the solution. Because of what he knows.
Because he made it.
He created. That is why when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sent us the prophets and the imams and tell us, okay, you have to observe these certain rulings in your life. It is because of this that is best for you. You know, first of all, your life is not limited into this world.
Yeah.
With death, another phase of life starts. So that phase of life is unlimited.
Dear listeners, go for a short break. Stay tuned. Something really beautiful, that is faith. You know, I think the problem with these people is that they think that they believe in Allah, they believe in Islam, they believe in the good things, but you know, they don't act as they should because they don't have faith and this faithfulness.
If you believe that there is a piece of fire, would you approach that fire?
It depends. Even here, it depends. Because, for example, maybe there is a person who just, oh, want to try this. No matter what is the results, I want to try to touch the fire.
It will burn you. Do you see that there is fire? Yeah? You're 100%
but
certain
it is
that there is fire.
You,
yeah? you will never burn yourself. So if you are 100% sure and certain that there is fire, you will never approach that fire. So why? Because you believe that there is fire.
So this is
if you believe that there is Jahannam, if you believe that there is hell, if you believe that there is God, if you believe that there is Day of Judgment, you will never commit sin. The problem is that these kind of people say, okay, we believe. But honestly, they definitely do not believe. If you believe that there is fire, you will not approach.
Yeah.
So belief will show itself in your actions.
But I think there is a problem
here. If you do not act, it means that you do not believe.
Wait, you know, for example, you just making an example, and this example is fire. Why fire, right? We don't look at the religion as the more beautiful aspect. For example, we can tell that these people, okay, there is heaven, not hell, you know? You are always going through the bad parts of it, and we are telling them, like, okay, you will be punished if you do that. There will be fire. You will be burned and something like that. But I think it is better to just go from the better, you know, part of the our religion.
Yeah, of course.
Our religion
both
is
are there.
Terrible.
Just give you an example. You know,
I know.
Both are there. Yeah,
I know that. Mm-hmm. I think this is the problem, actually, of course, from the other part.
There was a debate or a kind of challenging kind of discourse between Plato and Socrates, the two great Greek philosophers.
Yeah.
Socrates was of the view that if someone knows the truth, he will follow.
Mm-hmm.
But then Plato and Aristotle disagreed Socrates, saying that, no, sometimes we know what is good. We know what is bad. The understanding is there. We have a clear perception and understanding of the goodness or the badness of something. But despite the fact that we know, we commit that.
Yeah.
See? It is not like this that if someone knows, okay, Allah is kind, Allah is merciful, let's say heaven is there, then they follow. No, never. Sometimes they know that that is good and they do not do that. Sometimes they know that that one is bad and they will do that. You know, this is because of the nature of a human being in religion, in the heavenly religions like Judaism, like Christianity, like Islam. We have both punishment and rewards.
I know these.
And rewards, okay?
I'm telling you that why
just one point. Same
is
the case with the most developed countries.
Yeah.
With the most developed countries, with the most developed legal systems. We have both rewards and punishment.
Yeah.
It is completely in accordance with the nature of the human being. Okay? It's not something strange.
So there should be a balance between these punishment and these blessings, you know, these rewards. But there I think there isn't. In my opinion,
why not?
In society.
Punishment is so much limited. You know, paradise and hell, okay?
Yeah.
When it comes to paradise, what does paradise exactly mean? Paradise means the everlasting, the unlimited pleasure in an everlasting life. It is even not comparable to the whole universe.
Yeah.
Because of this, in some of the hadiths, it is said that if you just disturb someone, if you annoy someone, if you bother someone, and then if you give him the whole world, the whole universe, it will not recompensate what that you did with that person. Because the value of that person is more than the whole universe. Mm-hmm. Because of what? Because the life, the enjoyable life, the pleasures that he will receive in the hereafter life is unlimited. And this world is limited. You know? Even these, sometimes these problems, these difficulties, challenges that we may suffer in this world, of course, it's limited. But the pleasures we will receive is unlimited.
Yeah.
So it shows the kindness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It shows the mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give us an unlimited bounties, unlimited pleasures, blessings. And what? In this limited world, you know, our life is limited. This universe is limited. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that if you live truly in this limited time, you will have unlimited pleasures.
Okay.
Is Allah merciful, kind or not?
Actually, you know, this mercifulness is so much that we cannot even appreciate. Let's somehow wrap the things up more for the listeners. We were just talking about the group of people who claim that they believe in Allah and they believe in good things in their heart, but in their appearance and in their just actions, they don't show their belief. And we talked about the problem of these people and we just told that is a problem.
Sorry, they either do not understand what belief is.
Or
there's misunderstanding for them, or they just apparently show, pretend that they believe,
but
in reality they do not believe.
Let's keep it a cliffhanger and then we're going to go back for this topic. Stay tuned, dear listeners.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back. This is Youth Station, and we were talking about what is the problem with these people that just they do not show what they believe. My dear brother just told you that even here there is a problem of misunderstanding, or they understand but they pretend that they believe in that sort of thing. But even here, I think there were a misconception. You just told me that okay, there is kindness, there is blessing, there is a reward, and there is punishment. You know, and you have to consider both of them to find the right way to always remind yourself that what is good to do, what is bad not to do, and something like that. But I'm telling you that, unfortunately, in society, the people just somehow make the punishment more somehow stronger. And there is a stronger sense of punishment, you know, reminding punishment in this road.
Mm-hmm.
What is the problem?
Let me give you this example. Suppose that you are a mother.
Yeah.
And you have a daughter. And you know many things about the future of your daughter.
Yeah.
You know?
It's natural.
Because you've experienced your life.
Yeah.
You're older than her.
You've gone through this.
And you know what is going to happen for your daughter. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes if you put some limitation on your daughter, so that you help her to achieve a better life. It comes out of your mercy, your kindness as a mother to your daughter. Though your daughter might not understand you.
Mm-hmm.
Though your daughter might misunderstand that, okay, my mother is just putting all these limitations on me. He is like an enemy for me. He's not like a mother.
Yeah.
While mother is just taking care of you. While your mother, the mother knows that all these things that I am putting on my daughter, it will help him to achieve a successful, prosperous life.
Yeah.
So it comes out of mercy of mother.
Nice.
Though the daughter might not understand. Okay?
Yeah.
So forget about the daughter who does not understand. This is the responsibility of mother to put these limitations on the daughter. All those limitations for the daughter is for the betterness of her life, isn't that?
Yeah, it is.
So, that is why if Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tell us that, okay, you should not commit sin.
Mm-hmm.
If you commit sin, there would be some punishment. This punishment is again out of mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala,
nice.
Out of kindness. If Allah does not care, so he will never tell us, okay, he will never send us the prophets, the imams, to tell us these are the good things, these are the bad things, you will get punishment.
Yeah.
Even the punishment, even those limitations of mother is for the love of mother for the daughter. It is because of love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to the creatures.
Thank you.
So this is the reason that we have sometimes punishment. Punishment is because of love, because of mercy, because of kindness.
Thank you for a beautiful elaboration. There are some limitations and there are some bad things that you may tend to do, but because you have to strengthen your belief and your faith in Allah, and you have to actually strengthen your understanding of mercifulness of Allah, that these limitations, these sins that you shouldn't commit are just for your own self. Whatever there is here, whatever limitation, whatever actually things that you consider as limitation are just for your own sake. And this is all for today's episode. We're running out of time. I hope just dear listeners enjoy the topic of today. I bid you farewell and leave you in the warm embrace of God. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Experts say the United States remains the number one arms exporting nation on the planet. This country actually likes tension in the world because it feeds on the tension by stoking tension between countries and regions around the world and selling arms to the conflicting sides. The U.S. regime fills the pockets of military-industrial complex. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Throughout had an eye on this issue, writing, "Here's a seldom commented upon reality of this century and this moment. The United States remains the number one arms exporting nation on the planet. Between 2017 and 2021, it grabbed 39% of the total global weapons market, and there is nothing new about that. It has, in fact, been the top arms dealer in every year, but one for the past three decades. And it's a remarkably lucrative business, earning American weapons makers tens of billions of dollars annually. It would be one thing if it were simply a matter of money raked in by the industrial half of the military-industrial complex. Unfortunately, in these years, U.S.-supplied weaponry has also fueled conflicts, enabled human rights violations, helped destabilize not just individual countries but whole regions, and made it significantly easier for repressive regimes to commit war crimes." At first glance, it appeared that Joe Biden, on entering the White House, might take a different approach to arms sales. On the campaign trail in 2020, he had, for instance, labeled Saudi Arabia a pariah state and implied that the unbridled flow of U.S. weaponry to that kingdom would be reduced, if not terminated. He also bluntly assured voters that this country wouldn't check its values at the door to sell arms. Initially, Biden paused arms deals to that country and even suspended one bomb sale. Unfortunately, within 8 months of his taking office, sales to Saudi regime had resumed. In addition, the Biden team has offered arms to a number of other repressive countries, from Egypt to Nigeria and Philippines. Such sales contrast strikingly with the president's mantra of supporting democracies over autocracies, as well as his reasonable impulse to supply weapons to Ukraine. There are numerous examples, both historically and in the present moment, of how this country's arms sales have done more harm than good. But for now, let's just highlight four of them, including Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Nigeria, and the Philippines. Saudi Arabia has spearheaded a horrifying and disastrous 7.5-year-long intervention in Yemen that has killed thousands of people through indiscriminate airstrikes on civilian targets, ranging from hospitals, water treatment plants and factories to marketplaces, weddings and even a funeral. In all, that conflict has caused an estimated nearly 400,000 deaths, in large part due to a Saudi-run air and sea blockade that has impeded importing food, medical supplies and fuel. The overwhelming presence of U.S.-supplied aircraft, bombs, missiles, and other weaponry in that military campaign has led many Yemenis to view it as an American war on their country, sparing resentment and potentially damaging future relations throughout the region. In Yemen, it could help stop the killing tomorrow simply by cutting off arms, spare parts, and help in the maintenance of weapon systems. Such pressure would push the Saudi regime to definitively end its destructive airstrikes and its devastating blockade of that country, while potentially encouraging the launching of good faith negotiations to end the war in Yemen. When it comes to Egypt, the Biden administration has offered more than $6 billion in weaponry so far, including missiles, helicopters, and transport planes. All of that is going to the regime of Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, who is widely regarded as the most repressive leader in that country's history. The al-Sisi government has gunned down demonstrators in the street, locked up thousands of political prisoners, and run a scorched-earth counterinsurgency campaign in the northern Sinai Desert that has killed innocent civilians and driven thousands of people from their homes. Last April, the U.S. regime offered attack helicopters worth millions to Nigeria, marking the latest stage in the warming of relations between the two countries that began early in the Trump years. That was $997 million. The Nigerian military, however, has committed torture on a massive scale while targeting thousands of civilians in an ongoing campaign against the terrorist group Boko Haram and its local offshoots. As Human Rights Watch has reported, there is a reasonable basis to believe that Nigerian security forces have committed crimes against humanity, Amnesty International reported that 10,000 civilians died between 2011 and 2020 from extreme neglect in prisons run by Nigeria's military. And far from reducing terrorism, such conduct has further destabilized significant parts of the country, stoking opposition to the government and making it easier for terrorist groups to recruit and operate. Earlier this month, the security situation in Nigeria had deteriorated so badly that Biden administration ordered the family members of U.S. diplomats to leave Abuja, the capital, due to a heightened risk of terrorist attack.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, types of bad manner. In today's lesson, we will talk about the types of bad manners in Islam and which we need to avoid in our Islamic lifestyle. We know that there are the consequences that a person who has bad manner he has to face. And from the consequences, if I want to just count some of them, is that the person who has bad manner, it is said that he will go to the hellfire. He will face the hellfire. He will have the hard time in the grave. He will not have friends in this world. And obviously, he will be someone who does not get the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And there are many other things. And that's why Quran is emphasizing on having a good manner. And what the things that we need to consider is that we should know what does come under the bad manner. Some of the things that we can just mention is, number one, is that if someone insists on the sin or doing evil or bad deeds, this is one of the bad manners. That Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, who has created us, He wants us to not to perform bad deeds. He does not want us to perform evil deeds or to perform sin in our life. Therefore, someone who insists and keep repeating the bad deeds and he does that, this is from the bad manners. Number two is being ungrateful towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the people who help us, or maybe they have done a favor for us. Therefore, the one who is ungrateful to others is also known as being the having the bad manners. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the types of bad manners in the Islam and which we need to avoid in the Islamic lifestyle. Therefore, we mentioned two of them, that the one who keeps perform the bad evils, and the second one was to be ungrateful. Now, the third thing that comes under the list of the bad manners, we can say like being arrogant. And this arrogance is something that brings the bad manner in our life, which makes us to be bad amongst the people. Number four is being suspicious towards other. The suspicion, or the being suspicious towards the other, always thinking bad about the people. And this also is something from the bad manners. And the next thing is being jealous of others. Why we should be jealous of others? We should be thankful to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for what we have. Therefore, those who are jealous towards the others, remember that this is the sign of having the bad manner. The next thing which we can count is having a bad language, talking to people in a bad way. For example, some people have the habit of abusing others or using the non-ethical words or bad words against someone. So this is not good that to talk with them in that way. The next thing is to be a liar. If someone lies a lot, that is also amongst the bad manners. And after that, the thing which we can count is the one who swears wrongly. This is also from the bad manner. And on top of list, we can say that sometimes we see people who basically accuse people, who makes scandals for the people, and it's a wrong thing. And after that, backbiting. Backbiting is one of the important things. And then we can look at the matter of someone who is basically teasing his neighbors. Teasing his neighbors is also something that is not good. And it's been known as, you know, from the bad manners. And after that, we know that there are some people who reproach, who look for the faults of the others. And this is also from the bad manners. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight. Since Russia started its special operation in Ukraine in order to prevent NATO's eastward expansion, the United States and European countries have sent huge amounts of weapons and ammunition to Ukraine. Russia, which has announced that one of its goals of this operation is to save the people of eastern Ukraine from repressions of the Western-oriented Ukrainian regime, has always condemned the West's military aid and says this action will only prolong the war. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Germany's Der Spiegel has more for us. Germany's Defense Minister Alexei Reznikov confirmed the first unit of the country's cutting-edge Iris-T air defense system has arrived in Ukraine. Reznikov wrote on Twitter on Wednesday, 12th of October, a new era of air defense has begun in Ukraine. Iris-Ts from Germany are already here. The German defense minister noted that Kiev needs more weapons of this kind, arguing that protecting the sky over Ukraine against attacks by Russia is a moral imperative. Several hours later, Germany's defense ministry posted a tweet of its own, stressing that Berlin had kept its word and announced that the first Iris-T SLM air defense system has arrived in Ukraine. In a follow-up message, ministry officials quoted their boss, Christine Lambrecht, as hailing the shipment as very important support to Ukraine in its fight against missile shelling. The German Chancellor Olaf Scholz made the original pledge back in June, with a shipment initially slated for November. A total of four units, made up of command vehicle, a radar vehicle, and a truck-mounted launcher are scheduled to arrive in Ukraine sometime in 2023. According to media reports, Kiev requested at least a dozen of these ultra-modern air defense systems and offered to purchase them directly from the manufacturer Diehl Defense of Germany. Meanwhile, Germany's own military has not received a single unit of the ground-based IRIS-T system variant as of yet. This underlines concerns voiced by some German politicians and media outlets that Berlin is seriously depleting its own weapons stockpiles by supplying the hardware to Kiev. Meanwhile, Ukraine had until recently consistently lambasted Germany over its perceived unwillingness to provide heavy weaponry to Kiev. According to former Ukrainian ambassador to Germany, Andrei Melnik, when an effective range believed to be up to 40 kilometers, the air defense system is rather expensive. Speaking to Wirtschaftswoche magazine back in June, the diplomat estimated that one such unit could cost about 140 million euros. That is $135.4 million. French broadcaster Entendeur of France 2 says, French President Emmanuel Macron stated Paris will send air defense systems, radars, missiles and weapons to Ukraine in the coming weeks to defend against missile and drone attacks. Emmanuel Macron, whose comments come after Ukraine experienced a wave of Russian missile attacks, claimed on Wednesday, 12th of October, the French supplies would specifically help defeat these kinds of threats. He added that France would deliver the hardware and the necessary training to Ukraine. Ukraine has specifically requested the weapons as a priority. The French president noted that this decision followed an unprecedented phase of bombings that struck Ukrainian cities and infrastructure. Without going into detail, Emmanuel Macron said France was providing military intelligence to Ukraine. He claimed Russia is profoundly destabilized in its capacity to regenerate its arms, its production and industry. Emmanuel Macron also declared, "We are in a hybrid war," he said. "We're not just using weapons on the ground, but using weapons of information," claiming that Russia was using a wide variety of approaches to wage the conflict, including propaganda channels, paying for influence, including on social media sites, weaponizing migration, blackmail and hunger. Questioned on nuclear risks in Ukraine, the French President Emmanuel Macron confirmed that France's nuclear doctrine would not automatically commit to a retaliatory strike if Russia used nuclear weapons in Ukraine. The French President also refused to brand Russia a terrorist state, saying that such labels have little consequences. Macron claimed, "There's one state that's declared war, and that's more than enough." Sky News television channel has more about the same story. Britain's Defence Secretary Ben Wallace stated London will supply Kiev with advanced air defence missiles capable of shooting down cruise projectiles. Ben Wallace also announced a new aid ahead of a two-day NATO meeting in Brussels on Wednesday, 12th of October. The missile authorised for shipment to Ukraine is called the Advanced Medium-Range Air-to-Air Missiles, or AMRAAM. Furthermore, Britain will also be providing Ukraine with hundreds of drones to support its intelligence services and 18 howitzer artillery guns, in addition to 64 already delivered. British Defence Secretary Ben Wallace said these weapons will help Ukraine defend its skies from attacks and strengthen their overall missile defence alongside the US NASAMS, or National Advanced Surface-to-Air Missile System. The United Kingdom has previously supplied Kiev with various weapons, including the Endlor anti-tank missile launcher. Ukraine's key Western allies gathered in Brussels, Belgium, in order to discuss how to boost support for Ukraine and replenish allies' depleted military stockpiles. They pledge new air defences and more aid on the sidelines of the meeting. The pledges from Paris and London followed similar announcements from United States and Germany recently. Canada also announced it would provide over $47 million Canadian dollars in new military aid to Ukraine, with a package including artillery rounds, satellite communications equipment, winter clothing, and drone cameras. Furthermore, the French Defense Minister, Sébastien Lecornu, told Le Parisien newspaper on Saturday, 15th of October, President Emmanuel Macron has backed a proposal to train a large number of Ukrainian soldiers in France. He said the president has approved a training plan that will allow up to 2,000 Ukrainian soldiers to be welcomed in France. Sébastien Lecornu added, "They will be assigned to our units for several weeks," adding that military training for the use of Caesar howitzers had previously been offered to Ukrainian soldiers, Lecornu said, but now it's a change of scale.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Current world order will be replaced by a new order where US is isolated, Asia powerful, resistance front expanded. This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with students on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. This meeting was held on the occasion of National Students' Day and National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance, which are commemorated on the 13th of Aban, 4th of November. The Americans, they sent the agent whose name was Kermit Roosevelt to Iran. They had coordinated it with the English. They sent him to Iran with a suitcase full of dollars. He went to the British embassy. He coordinated it with some traitorous military personnel and a number of British-affiliated elements. They gathered up some thugs, killed the military troops, and created that disgraceful coup on the 19th of August. They also arrested Mossadegh and his entourage. Some were executed and others were imprisoned for many years. The dispute between the Iranian nation and the United States dates back to the 19th of August. Why did you stage a coup against a national government that was elected by the people? Why did you overthrow it? You gave the oil that he, Mossadegh, had taken out of the clutches of the English to a consortium, which included England, the United States, and several other governments. So it went from the frying pan into the fire.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Our dispute with the Americans started from that day because of their interest, which was oil in those days. The Americans did not show any mercy even to a person who was trusted towards the U.S. and a westernized person. Mossadegh was westernized. Well, that was the beginning. Now American politicians are hypocritically and shamelessly saying that we support the Iranian nation. You hear these words in the news and on social media and in other places. They say we support the Iranian nation. Well, this is an extremely shameless claim. I'd like to ask the Americans the following question. Is there anything that you had the ability to do against the Iranian nation in the past four decades that you haven't done? Whatever they didn't do was because they weren't able to do it. It didn't benefit them. If they could, they would have done it. If it was worthwhile for them, and if they weren't afraid of the Iranian youth, they would have started a direct war, like in Iraq. But they were too afraid to do it.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
In the 2020 presidential election campaign, Joe Biden made a full return to the JCPOA pact on Iran's nuclear energy program, a key plank of his foreign policy promises. After 2 years in office, his report card on keeping that promise can only be given a failing grade. Not only has Biden not returned to the JCPOA, but he has constantly levied new sanctions on Iran and seems to have fully retained the maximum pressure policy of his predecessor.
For 2 years now, Biden and, you know, his team of foreign policy ghouls like Tony Blinken have refused to lift the illegal sanctions dating back to the Trump era you know, Trump illegally withdrew from the JCPOA, and they're refusing to lift those sanctions, which has made any negotiations with Iran impossible.
Biden had benefited from total control over Congress, but the Democratic Party lost control of the House of Representatives in the recent midterm elections. Low turnout and disillusionment with many unkept promises are often being cited as the main reasons for the Democrats' defeat. Last month, a top poll on foreign policy found that a whopping 79% of Americans want the United States to continue to pursue negotiations with Iran. On almost no other key foreign policy question was there such massive support. With Congress now divided and more conservative, most analysts say that even if Biden did genuinely pursue diplomacy, Congress would easily block the deal under the so-called Iran Nuclear Agreement Review Act.
You know, the ball has been in the U.S.'s court for 2 years, and, you know, I can see no reason to believe that Biden or the U.S. is committed to the agreement or negotiating in good faith. All they've done is ask for more concessions from Iran. And actually, more recently, they seem a lot more interested in trying to destabilize the country by meddling in its affairs, its sovereign affairs, of course, referring to the recent protests.
With their recent accession to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, Iran has significantly expanded their diplomatic cooperation with their non-Western allies. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
An incident that caused Iranians a great deal of agony. Iranian mourners took part in the funeral procession of the victims of the terror attack in the city of Izeh in floods of tears. In addition to expressing their deepest sympathy with families of the victims, the participants also voiced their support for the Islamic Republic amid the enemy's efforts to destabilize the country.
We have taken part in this funeral procession to send a message to the U.S. and Israel. They must know that Iran is not alone. We support the leader of the Islamic Republic and the Iranian nation. They cannot sow division in Iran by killing civilians. We will be victorious.
My fellow countrymen and dear people of Izeh, be sure that the Islamic Republic is strong and will definitely take revenge for the blood that has been shed by all the cruel enemies who are servants of the criminal government of the United States.
Also, a number of high-ranking state and military officials attended the funeral, vowing to bring the perpetrators of this crime to justice as soon as possible.
The perpetrators of this crime will be punished. A number of them have been arrested, while some others have been identified. Some of them attempted to flee the country through border crossings. However, they have been arrested. We will inform the Iranian nation about arresting the rest of the perpetrators in the coming days.
Officials say so far 11 individuals who've been involved in Izeh terrorist attack have been detained. Seven people, including a 9-year-old child and a woman, were killed, while 11 others were wounded after gunmen started shooting at people in the center of the city.
The terrorist attack was completely pre-planned. The terrorists broke the cameras across the city by shooting at them 24 hours prior to the attack. Then the next day, they opened fire at people at a crossroad from two directions. Their goal was to cause a massive bloodshed.
As they said, the enemies cannot turn Iran to another Syria or Lebanon by carrying out violent acts like the ones in Shah Cheragh, Isfahan, and Izeh.
Iranian officials have strongly condemned the recent terror attacks in the country. They say the enemies of the Islamic Republic have now resorted to armed terror attacks that target civilians because they have failed to advance their anti-Iran agenda through creating media hype. Mahdi Abbasian, Izeh, Khuzestan.
The
The trailer released on Thursday for the documentary movie From Tehran to Tirana is so powerful in its message about the MKO and its practices that it leaves no room for doubting why every defector that has managed to flee insists on calling it a cult where members are required to demonstrate complete devotion to its leader.